Darba l-semija ta' Campus 103.7, Emanuel Buttigieġ u Liam Gawċi jil-għawkom għal taħdita Clio. Ma'na l-lumanna l-Dr. Chiara Ciacalupo. Chiara hija esperta fl-arkeologija, il-muzeologija u l-arfin dwar il-kristjanizmu fl-antikità. Hija Connex Plus Marie Curie Fellow fl-Universitat Carlos III ta' Madrid u Visiting Professor tal-Muzeologija u l-Istorja tal-Arkeologija Kristjana fl-Istitut Pontificio tal-Arkeologija Kristjana f'Ruma. Minn Mejju 2024 ser tkun Marie Curie Fellow fl-Università ta' Malta. Fost il-publikazzjoniet tagħha insibu Giovanni Francesco Abela Work Private Collection and the Birth of Christian Archaeology in Malta li ħareġ fl-2020. Dear Chiara, welcome to our program. It's a real pleasure to have you with us.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And Chiara, with you today we're going to discuss an extremely fascinating subject, Christian archaeology between Rome and Malta.
Yes.
Maybe we could start by explaining a bit to our audience, what do we mean by this? What is Christian archaeology and why between Rome and Malta?
Well, Rome and Malta has always been very linked in many situations, from art, the order has very strong link with the Holy See, obviously. And this happened since the beginning of the history of the Order of Malta. And through the history of the order, many new connections between Malta and Rome were created. And one of these is absolutely this study of Christian archaeology. What we mean by Christian archaeology? Christian archaeology is the study of Christian remains from the first centuries. So from the third century after Christ, obviously, onwards. And we have in Rome our first archaeologist, our first real Christian archaeology, the first discoverer of the Roman catacombs that worked more or less in 1624-1629, that was Antonio Bosio, that was a Maltese citizen. He was born in Malta, and he went in Rome when he was very young in order to live with his uncle Giacomo Bosio, which was the first historian of the order, so has a great role in developing the history of the Order of Malta, mm-hmm. and of the island itself, obviously. And this nephew, this young Antonio, not only was he the first and most important catacomb archaeologist in Rome, but he was also the agent of the order. So he kept very strong relations with Malta, and this helped as well the diffusion and the widespread of his work with Christian archaeology in Malta as well. So many you introduced me citing my work on about Abela.
Yep.
Abela was strongly inspired by the work of Antonio. They met each other when Abela is vice cancelliere was in Rome and stayed and worked with Antonio Bosio and Giacomo Bosio, and was greatly inspired by the work that he was doing in the Roman catacombs. So when he came back to Malta, he started investigating as well the Maltese catacombs.
Uh-huh. Well, Chiara, you already have laid out for us a fascinating cast of characters. Giacomo Bosio,
yes.
Antonio
yes.
Bosio, Giovanni Francesco Bela. So just with that roll call of names, it's obvious that this is an interesting story, and which
Indeed.
Is very much your field of expertise. But Liam has a question, so I'm going to pass it to him for a moment.
Because what is obviously very obvious is that this was a time when they were trying to find the roots of Maltese Christianity. How impressed or how interesting was it what they were finding in Malta compared to obviously the jewel that was Rome and the amount of archaeology that you're going to find in Rome until today? Caput Mundi is where you, at every corner you find archaeology. What were they finding then in Malta, and how early was this study?
Well, this is a very interesting question, because it allows us going a little bit deeper into the book of Abela, the Descrizione di Malta. Well, when Abela, we can say that Abela was the first one to really look at the catacombs of Malta in a scientific way, or in a like an antiquarian. Mm-hmm. And he did that because he saw Antonio Bosio doing, he was doing that in Rome in the same years. So before Abela, we don't really have scholar interest in the catacombs. We obviously have texts or, scholars that tell that in Malta we have burials, and for example, Ashah, Marc Antonio Ashah, or Manduka, they say that
in Malta. It's not scientific.
No. The first description of the catacombs in of the Christian catacombs in Malta is that one in the Descrizione di Malta by Giovanni Francesco Abela. And this description is very interesting because if you look at it, if you really start reading the chapter, the Notizia Sexta in the Descrizione, and you know the catacombs of Malta, which are very different from the Roman one. They're much more similar to those in Sicily. Rome has these fantastic catacombs with long galleries that go for kilometers and are very special. The Maltese one are totally different. They have a structure that is totally different from the Roman one. And if you look at Abela, if you read Abela, you see that he sometimes tries to describe the Christian catacombs of Malta much more as they were much more similar to Rome. The description that Abela gives of the catacomb of Malta is not that correct. If you look at it, he tries somehow to rise the status of the Roman, the Christian catacombs of Malta by comparing exactly with that of Rome.
He's trying to give them a Roman dress.
Yes, a Roman dress.
It was his exercise at the end of the day. Yes, it is very obvious that he was trying to be a little bit too proud of what we have.
Yes, even when he talks about the crosses that are painted everywhere in the catacombs, he always cites quotes Bosio exactly. He copies sentences of Bosio, and he uses Bosio as the first source for the catacombs of Malta as well. So this is very interesting. They try to Romanize. He tries to Romanize the catacomb of Malta,
So effectively, Chiara, what you're saying is that, well, he said they had met each other, Antonio.
Yes, absolutely.
And Giovanni,
yes.
Francesco.
Yes.
But they are also obviously in conversation in terms of their publications and letters, maybe. I don't know if any letters.
Yes, they are much more in conversation through letters because Antonio Bosio dies in 1629 and Abela retires from public life to write his masterpiece in 1640. Mm. But when he started being as vice cancelliere, in 1624, and now that I am studying, as you know, the letters between Antonio Bosio and the great master, the Grand Master, it is clear that the majority of the relation between the two, between the Great Master, the Grand Master, and Bosio, passed through Abela.
Can you tell us more about this? This sounds very interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Well, I am in the process of analyzing the letters. I have this commitment of studying the letters from the great master to Antonio Bosio, which is
so this an is an exclusive for our program.
No?
Yes, good. Tell our listeners a little bit more.
No, well, the fact is that it's very simple that Antonio Bosio has always been considered as an archaeologist, obviously. But before my study that came out in 2020, that was my PhD thesis, and became a book in 2020, and it is the main reason why I arrived in Malta, but this is another story, if you want I can tell you later. So he's renowned worldwide as an archaeologist. But actually, being the nephew of Giacomo Bosio, which was agent of the order, so a kind of ambassador, we can say the secretary of the ambassador of the order in Rome, and it was the figure that used to make the majority of the practical work for mm-hmm. the order in Rome, we can say. And Giacomo dies very old, and in the latest years, they try to speak with Antonio much more than with Giacomo, because obviously he dies in 27 when he was 83 or something like this. So
right.
they start working, the grandmaster starts working directly with Antonio in 1620. They work alone without Giacomo, obviously. And they have an important exchange of letters, which is unknown, because everybody always talk about Antonio as an archaeologist and not as an agent of the order, as a servant, as they say in the letters of the order. And this is something that I'm trying to explore right now with this study of the letters between the great master and Antonio. And it's very interesting because it gives a glimpse of the Maltese society of the time that is unique, I mean. And from this we can obviously understand for the first time, I am understanding things that I've never had any idea of, the really effective relations between the ambassadors, the ambassador, which was a very problematic one until 1628, and then Aldo Brandini, and then Bosio, and then all these people that were working with the master in Malta, among which we have Abella. So there is all this net of scholars that are also administrators yes. of the order. So this is very interesting.
It's the bureaucracy of a state, effectively, no? In Malta
exactly.
and in Rome. So it's a very
exactly.
fascinating window.
Exactly.
If we go back to Antonio Bosio as mm-hmm. the archaeologist.
Yes.
And correct me, but I think he is known as the father of Christian archaeology. Is that one of his...
Not exactly. We say that the father of Christian archaeology is Giovanni Battista de Rossi, which was a very famous archaeologist in the 19th century that has some links with Malta as well.
Uh-huh.
We say, after a definition of Giovanni Battista de Rossi itself, that Antonio is the Cristoforo Colombo of the Roman
yes.
catacombs.
Yes. Well,
way
nice
more
one.
Poetic. Yeah, that's nice.
So how does he get involved in this? How does he start off? And how do people look at him at the time? Is he weird? Is he admired? Bit of both.
Well, yeah, this is a very interesting question that involves also the private life of Antonio. We have very few information about his first years when he was because he was an illegitimate son of a knight. Of a Bosio, that was the Balio di Pavia, Otto Giovanni Antonio Bosio, and he was sent to Rome because he was an illegitimate son. He stayed with
of course.
obviously.
Not a bad place to be.
No. And he came to Rome in order to stay with his uncle, with Giacomo, and Giacomo adopted him through a papal brief. In 1608, I guess, or 1610, I don't remember now. But when he was old, when he was almost 30.
All right.
So we have very few information about his life.
Chiara,
we know that...
Chiara, 30 is not old, please.
30. Yeah, I know, I'm 33, so... But imagine living 30 years without having a... being an illegitimate child. Yes,
yes. It's kind of. But you're living in Rome, so it's not that of a problem. Yes.
And I guess I know my parents, so it's not my problem.
Mind you, even in my 40s, if I have a rich uncle who wants to adopt me.
Sure, we are calling to all the rich uncles out there, please adopt us. However.
Sorry, Chiara, but I had to say it.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I agree. He got adopted by Giacomo. So we have very few information before, because obviously, according to the papal law, if you are an illegitimate son, you cannot buy a house. You cannot have, and so when you don't have a public life, there are no archival deeds that can help us tracing your life. Wow. What we know by other sources is that he went to the Collegio Romano, that was the Jesuit school of Rome, which is today the Gregoriana, a very famous school in Rome. Mm-hmm. And this is crucial for me. This is where I believe that he got in touch with the most important archaeologists and scholars of the time. The idea that Giovanni Battista de Rossi brought in the 19th century, that he was the first one to discover the Christian catacombs, is not actually totally exact. Because many, the Christian catacombs of Rome were well known. We had pilgrims, we had visitors, we had the first scholars that visited one or two, but obviously it was a very short number of catacombs that were known. Mm. What he did was a complete rediscovering, according to the sources, to the late antique and medieval sources, of many catacombs. It was a widespread exploration that he made. But this idea that the catacombs were totally forgotten, and then he rediscovered everything, this is
incorrect.
Yes, totally incorrect. And so visiting, living in the Collegio Romano and living with Giacomo, that was a crucial figure, a crucial character in the contemporary cultural horizon in Rome, that was made him close to Christian archaeology. We are in the Counter-Reformation, the first decades of Counter-Reformation, and Christian archaeology as a political role in Counter-Reformation. Uh-huh. So this environment where he lived, where he studied, well, he just developed his natural interest in archaeology.
Yeah. What you say is very important, because Luther had chastised the church, saying that Rome was built on sin. But the work of someone like Antonio Bosio, who is systematizing the catacombs, he's saying, No, Rome is built on the bones Christians. Of the martyrs.
Indeed.
Yes, yes.
You know, indeed.
It's even probably holier than Jerusalem in a sense, because this is where the church si è fatta l'ossa, no? In Italian, literally, where the bones were made, where the martyrs died, and it's, you know, the soil is seeped with blood. These metaphors are very powerful. So I can see how, you know, from what you say, how important what Antonio was doing would have been. If we go to Giovanni Battista de Rossi, because you've mentioned him a number of times, and he seems to also have had links to Malta, but who was he and how does he come into the picture?
Well, he was a great archaeologist. He was a very important scholar that we say that he is the father of Christian archaeology as a modern science. Obviously, we have to imagine that the techniques used by Bosio in entering and discovering and uncovering sometimes the catacombs are not modern archaeological methods.
Yes,
very similar. We have in the many accounts in the Roma Sotterranea by Bosio that describes punctually how he entered in the catacombs. So it's very, very interesting. Yes.
That's interesting. Yes.
With a whip.
He says, with candles. He says that the first time they entered in December 1595 with other friends of the Collegio Romano, they got lost and they believed that they were going to die.
Oh my God.
They stay in the catacomb of Domitilla for one night. They think that they are going to die and they just pray and give the soul to the Lord and so on. And then they find the exit. And then he says that they have been taught by the experience how to behave in a catacombs. But however, Giovanni Battista de Rossi was actually a real archaeologist. We are in the second half of the 19th century. He was the papal archaeologist. He worked at the service of Pius IX. And we are in another important moment for Christian archaeology, where Christian archaeology were greatly politicized. We see this throughout the history of Christian archaeology. We have great moments of the rediscoveries that at the same time are great moments of politicization of Christian archaeology. Mm-hmm. So Counter-Reformation and the pontificate of Pius IX.
Obviously, 19th century is the age of revolutions. The political
exactly. This is the last. Mm-hmm. Exactly. This is the last pope that holds a secular power on Italy.
Right.
Rome is conquered by the reign of Italy in 1870, mm-hmm. and the pope is obviously Pius IX, and he uses Christian archaeology in order to stress his. To stress how normal is that the Pope has power on Italy, because the Pope is the representative figure of Petrus, and his power lays on the catacombs, lays on bones, lays on tradition, and
his
so on.
It's legitimacy, you know?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And he understood very well that the catacombs could be a good weapon for this. So he paid the most important rediscovering in the Roman catacombs, which is the rediscovery of the catacomb of Callistus, which was the great news, the Pompeii of our time, I can say, no? So the most important catacombs with the tombs of the first, with many tombs of the first popes, and he became not only the most important archaeologist, he became a point of reference for the whole Europe and Mediterranean. So scholars all over the Mediterranean and all over Europe wrote to him letters and letters and letters to have advices, to share ideas on Christian archaeology, because these rediscoveries in Rome just gave the idea to scholars all over the world to look for Christian archaeology in their own homelands. And there is in the Biblioteca Vaticana, in the Vatican Library, we have the letters of Giovanni Battista de Rossi, the letters that he received, and they are something like 40 faldoni, 40 volumes 40 of letters.
Volumes. Wow.
Oh. It's incredible. It's an incredible heritage that we have, because it gives us the idea of how Christian archaeology developed around Europe and the Mediterranean. And obviously, my idea was, well, let's look at Maltese that wrote at Giovanni Battista de Rossi, because obviously in the same years we have the rediscovery of the catacombs by Annetto Caruana, ovviamente, and the interest and the new studies on St. Paul and the presence of St. Paul in Malta, St. Paul Grotto and the first cathedral in Malta. And so I went looking for Maltese archaeologists, and I found that actually there are Maltese archaeologists that wrote to the Rossi in order to have informations about this new discovery in Malta. So he was a kind of genius that was overlooking Christian archaeology everywhere in Europe and the Mediterranean. And it was very interesting, because actually we see how through these letters, how these archaeologists thought, what they believed that was important for Christian archaeology in Malta. And the last thing that I want to say, that we even have in the 20th century a very strong relation between a Christian archaeology in Malta and an archaeologist in Rome. Victor Camilleri, which was the father who rediscovered the Catacomb of St. Agata in the 1980s, more or less, had a strong friendship with Antonio Ferrua, which was a very important archaeologist in Rome, and they have letters that they write one another commenting on the discoveries of St. Agata. So this binding relationships between Rome and Christian archaeology starts between Rome and Christian archaeology in Malta starts in the 17th century, and they go on until now, we can say.
Yes, you are the heir of the Romans, you know.
Well, this is a pretty big burden to put on my shoulders.
Just don't get lost in the catacombs, and you can keep this going on.
Fascinating.
It's been a fascinating discovery for myself, Emmanuel, and surely our listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Chiara, for being with us today, and thank you for sharing all this information. And we look forward to reading and learning all about your new research. And I still suggest to our listeners to go in search of Giovanni Francesco Abela, Work, Private Collection, and Birth of Christian Archaeology in Malta, published by our very own Dr. Chiara. Would like to bid our listeners farewell, and we will be back next week on the same place on 103.7 Campus FM. Thank you.